This whole thing started with a 911 call.
911, what's your emergency?
This is Alex Murdoch. I need the police to stand up immediately.
The guy on the phone, Alex Murdoch, seemed to be in a panic. He told the dispatcher that he'd found Maggie, his wife of nearly 30 years, and Paul, their 22-year-old son, shot at the family's sprawling 1,700-acre country estate.
Are they breathing?
No, ma'am.
Maggie and Paul were dead. And it did not take long for word to get around tiny, tiny Hampton, South Carolina. Because as you probably know by now, the Murdochs, well, they were like royalty here. Rich, popular. Over the next year and more, the story of Alex Murdoch and his family would become national, even international. And it really was quite the saga. This tragic boat crash that killed a teenager, a roadside suicide attempt, allegations of fraud and theft. Then, of course, there were the double murders. Each headline made it pretty clear the Murdoch dynasty was ending. I'm Craig Melvin, and this is Dateline Debrief. Joining me is my colleague and good friend, Carol Gable.
Hello.
In this podcast, we're going to take you behind the scenes of our reporting on the Murdoch saga. From the moments that surprised us to the moments that really touched us. So if you haven't seen or listened to our Dateline report, Dark Waters, you can actually listen now at the link in the description of this podcast, or you can just watch the episode on Peacock. So I remember vividly June 8th, 2021, when the news of the double murders first broke.
We are learning disturbing new details on that mysterious double homicide in South Carolina.
I was juggling interviews for the Today Show. I was getting ready to interview Kevin Hart and Dwayne Wade on the same day. So I was knee-deep in prep. And my phone just started blowing up with text messages from folks from my home state of South Carolina. Or, as I usually refer to it, God's country. I was reared in Columbia and started my career there as well, in my hometown, at WIS-TV.
Greg Melvin, WIS News 10.
I still know a lot of reporters in South Carolina. So I got on the phone, and at the same time, I'm scrolling, trying to find out more about what's happened. And in no time, I was on the phone with Carol Gable.
So I have to sit right here.
Carol is a long time, not to date her, but she's been a Dateline producer for a while now, and she's based out of Anderson, South Carolina. She is a proud citizen of the Palmetto State, through and through. Right down to the choice of her pet, I kid you not, she has a Boykin Spaniel. And for those of you who don't know, that is the official state dog of South Carolina. One of the other things to know about my friend Carol, her personality, just as fiery as that red hair of hers.
I just think you and I ought to have the Carol and Craig show.
The problem with that is if we do that, then I'm going to lose my other job.
Well, you know, I'm jobless right now, so this works perfectly.
You should know Carol officially retired, air quotes, back in 2020. That was the year before the murders. But Carol didn't stay retired. No. Dateline put her back on the payroll to cover this case. All is well?
Well, yeah, if I could ever have 2 minutes to retire, but it hasn't happened.
Carol, if I've heard correctly, you were retired, and you decided you couldn't stay retired.
I was lured back by the prospect of being paired with you.
I thought it was this case that brought you back.
Okay, well, that's the truth, but I thought the lured back by you is a better story.
Between Carol and I, we've spent more than 40 years covering all
kinds of stories in South Carolina. But the Lowcountry, where much of this story takes place, that area is, it's somewhat unfamiliar, even to longtime South Carolinians like us. And then there's Hampton. The town of Hampton, South Carolina, that's where the Murdochs called home. It's really an insular place, except during 1 week every summer.
Watermelons were a popular crop in Hampton County.
They have the oldest watermelon festival in the United States, and it's a very big deal. There are parades, there are exhibits, there's a pet show, and as it so happened, two of my childhood friends became the watermelon queen.
Wow, that's a big deal in Hampton County.
Very big, and you are crowned. There is a beauty queen crowning, and that's always a direct path to the Miss South Carolina pageant.
I did not know that. For a lot of folks who aren't familiar with the area, we're talking about a county that's, you know, between 500 and 600 square miles. But a lot of the people who live there, their families have been there for generations.
Well, they have been. And if you call the courthouse and ask for records, you might be talking to a Murdaugh. You may be talking to someone's brother, uncle, cousin, aunt, grandmother, sister-in-law. So they're all connected.
I first got on the story when news of the double murders broke, when Maggie and Paul were found dead. But Carol had been working on a story that actually involved Paul 2 years earlier.
I've worked for decades from South Carolina for Dateline, and I've always particularly looked for cases that we might want to cover in South Carolina. So I saw this when it was the report of a boat crash in 2019, and then just kept following it from there.
The boat crash was really our entry into the world of the Murdochs. Paul Murdoch was accused of drunkenly driving his family's boat into a bridge support. Five of his friends were on board. Some of the friends fell overboard, including 19-year-old Mallory Beach. Mallory died in that crash.
There were many, many months when I had virtually given up speaking to anyone who'd been on the boat that night. They were very close friends. They're a very tight group. And I think their overarching feeling was, what's the point? We lost Mallory. One of the people we for sure wanted to talk to was Anthony Cook.
Anthony Cook, Mallory Beach's boyfriend.
We approached him very carefully and started with meeting with him, sort of a what I would call talk about talking, just to see what he would like to talk about and what his comfort level would be, because I knew it would be extremely difficult.
After spending hours talking to Anthony and his parents, he agreed to an on-camera interview, and he told us, well, basically how he's tried to survive in the wake of his girlfriend Mallory's death.
It does not, by any means, even close to get easier. But you figure out ways to just live your life anyway because you don't have a choice.
I'd say the interview with Anthony was one of the most difficult interviews we had to do because you're aware he's injured. You know, he's emotionally injured.
You can tell that he's still having a very hard time even after all these years dealing with what happened that night. It weighs on him emotionally and spiritually, even physically.
He is haunted by nightmares, he tells you, every single night he goes to bed. He doesn't know what will ever make that better for him.
When Carol first learned about that boat crash, she also heard the name Murdoch for the first time. So Carol, being Carol, she did some digging, and she found out they were a family of powerful and successful attorneys. In fact, they had been for almost a century. Their name was known everywhere in Hampton County.
People tell me that you go on any baseball field during league practice and you're going to see jerseys with Murdaugh Law Firm on the back.
The name Alec Murdaugh was, I mean, it's high cotton, which is a phrase that we use there in the Palmetto State. Carol and I, we often talk about how it was really that boat crash. The boat crash is what started to lift the lid on all these secrets that Alec Murdaugh was probably trying very hard to hide. You could make the argument that the financial crimes, even the double murder, perhaps we're not talking about any of that, had it not been for that boat crash.
We would not be talking about it had it not been for that boat crash, because it was almost like it lifted a scab off of a wound that had never been examined before. And of course, that wound was the alleged deeds of Alex Murdaugh. We sit here talking about this today, you know, understanding three people eventually have lost their lives. You know, we wouldn't be here but for that.
You know, I've worked as an anchor, a journalist, a reporter, since I was in high school. And over time, you really do start to develop this sort of sixth sense for stories. You can almost predict, after a few years of doing this, what's likely going to happen next. Things tend to follow, more often than not, a logical order. I've been covering the Murdaughs long enough now to know that this isn't that kind of story. And I know Carol feels that too.
I think in many respects, it's been at least five stories in one, and any one of which on its own would be worthwhile reporting. But in fact, it's been mashed together into one. So keeping up and current with all of these elements has literally been a full-time job.
So here we are. It's June of 2021, last year. Alec Murdaugh, he's due in court, finally to respond to questions about his personal finances. Alec was being sued for wrongful death by the family of 19-year-old Mallory Beach, in part because he allegedly allowed his son Paul, the same son who was later shot and killed, to drink alcohol underage. In that hearing, Alec may have been required, compelled, to hand over financial documents. Alec had been putting off requests for that information for a while now, and then, just 3 days before he was perhaps going to be forced to make that information public, his wife and son get shot to death.
A high-profile double homicide investigation in the Lowcountry.
The day after the murders, just the next day, local law enforcement announced, no danger to the public, folks.
That actually put gasoline on speculation, because if you know there's no suspect on the loose, does that mean you know who it is?
And that is when I think a lot of folks who had not been following the story closely, that's when all of us were like, whoa, 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 this doesn't smell right. And that's, I would imagine, Carol, that's also when your phone started blowing up, too.
Sources that I'd worked with for years here in South Carolina called me and said, you will not believe what has happened. And part of the unbelievability is that these were two people that you would not expect would be in anybody's crosshairs. And so you have to know a lot about that area. It could not be much of a chance occurrence.
I started working the phones, too, at this point, calling folks connected to law enforcement, folks in Columbia that I'd known for years, and all of them pretty much said the same thing, that this was not some sort of random act of violence. And then you have all of these reporters descending on, you know, little old Hampton, South Carolina.
I remember when we started going to hearings or going to talk to Alex Murdaugh's attorneys. I mean, before there might be four or five cameras at an event, then there are 10, then there are 15. And then I'm running into reporters from the London papers. And I felt sorry for those guys because they are standing out on some corner of South Carolina. They don't even know where they are.
So then, about 3 months later, our phones, they started blowing up again. There had been another shooting. And this time, it was even crazier because the target was Alex Murdaugh himself, or so he told the 911 operator.
Did they actually shoot you or they tried to shoot you? They shot me, and then I'm bleeding a lot.
He goes so far as to get airlifted to this hospital to be treated for these gunshot wounds. And you've seen the medical report.
I've seen the photographs.
What did the photographs show?
There is a little injury, like you bumped your head, probably broke the skin. And frankly, I don't know what we should have been expecting. He goes to the courthouse for a hearing very shortly thereafter, and everyone is trying to sit on the side of the courtroom so they can get a look at the back of this head, and you don't see any noticeable injury.
But the medical report noted that Alex had a fractured skull and minor brain bleed. Within weeks of that alleged shooting, Carol and I, well, we heard another version of the story from Alex's lawyers. They explained that Alex actually asked the man to shoot him. And Alex said he did that because he wanted to die so his only living child, Buster, could collect on a $10 million life insurance policy. So after that, Alex gets arrested on charges of conspiracy to commit insurance fraud. So at this point, Carol and I, like a lot of folks, probably like just about everyone who's listening to this podcast, we were pretty confused. Why would this wealthy attorney resort to this kind of desperation?
He clearly knew what he had done was wrong.
Enter a man named Dick Harpootlian. This is someone that Carol and I have known for decades. He's a state senator. He's a former chair of the South Carolina Democratic Party. Dick has been connected for a long time. In fact, his wife currently is an ambassador. But Dick is also a former prosecutor, and he has tried several death penalty cases. Dick Harpootlian is a guy that a lot of folks want on their side.
You can't underestimate Dick Harpootlian. I mean, he is a skilled prosecutor, a job he held for many, many years.
Harpootlian now has a private practice in Columbia. He and Jim Griffin are Alex Murdaugh's criminal attorneys. And I talked to Dick on the Today Show, and I asked him about Alex's state of mind, if you will, during that alleged roadside shooting.
He was in a massive depression, realized that things were going to get very, very, very bad.
Very, very bad. That was quite the understatement. Carol and I, we thought we'd heard it all. We were dead wrong. After this alleged roadside shooting, we started to hear news reports that Alex Murdaugh, the well-respected attorney from this family whose legacy stretched back generations, had allegedly been stealing millions from his clients. And some of them were even more than just traditional clients. They were folks that he'd grown up with, people that he had welcomed into his home, people like Gloria Satterfield, who was the Murdaughs' longtime housekeeper and frequent babysitter.
She was very dependable, and she worked hard at what she did.
That's Ginger Hadwin there. Ginger is Gloria's sister.
She loved what she did. She took honor in the job that she did. Because we were taught to believe that your job, it doesn't matter what it is, it's important. And you treat it like it's important. And you treat the people that you work for like they are important.
I met Ginger and four other members of Gloria's family. It was deeply emotional for them, remembering Gloria Satterfield and what had happened to their family. But what was really jarring is they said that, you know, Alex's wife and sons, they were like family to Gloria. But in 2018, Gloria has this just really nasty fall at the Murdoch home. And just weeks later, she died from her injuries. What really got me, Carol, was when we sat down with the family of Gloria Satterfield. And this is one of those interviews that always stays with you. And for folks who haven't followed the case, Gloria Satterfield was, by all accounts, an angel among us. But it wasn't the fall and the tragedy of her death that was so jarring. It's what happened after.
Exactly. To me, this was a turning point in how people really thought of Alec Murdaugh. And that is that he says to the family, don't worry, I'm going to help you, and you can essentially sue me because she, you know, had a trip and a fall at my house. So they do, and there is a settlement, but they get no money. And he doesn't even give them a little piece of it. So it's just, it was really, I don't know, in an old-fashioned word, dastardly, that he would prey on someone who had devoted so much to his family.
We soon learned that Gloria's was not an isolated case. As we started to dig deeper and deeper, a team of reporters at NBC and Dateline, we ended up sitting down with another attorney. This guy, his name's Justin Bamberg.
Those of us who know better know that no one ever starts out stealing everything. Your kid doesn't start out by walking in and taking the whole cookie jar off the kitchen countertop when his mom has told him no. They start with one cookie and see if you say anything.
So, like Dick Harpootlian from earlier in the podcast, I've known Justin since my days at WIS Television. That's the NBC affiliate in Columbia, South Carolina. In the Murdoch case, he's representing several clients who claim they were swindled by Alec Murdoch.
One thing that I think is so significant is his MO in many of these alleged cases was that he would say, you know, all I could get was $100,000 for you, or more likely $50,000, $40,000. And to people who have a median income, as you know, Hampton is one of the poorer counties in South Carolina.
Yeah.
That is so much money. You could be looking at a year's salary. So the first thing that pops in your mind is not going to be, oh, you could have gotten more. Let me see the settlement sheet. You're thrilled that that's what you get. But meanwhile, he's over here taking the lion's share of what the settlement was, according to these complaints.
So now it's July 10th, 2022. I woke up thinking about my grandma. She died years ago. She used to make these amazing biscuits every Sunday after church. We'd go there for dinner. So I decided, and I hadn't done this actually ever, but I decided to make some of her biscuits that morning because my kids and I, we had been talking about biscuits. But here's the thing. Carol often calls me on Sunday.
Hey, Craig.
Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon doing football. Carol really calls anytime she wants. She doesn't do well with boundaries. Nonetheless, I took my biscuit. I picked up Carol's call. And this time, well, Carol wanted to tell me that her sources had been telling her that Alec Murdoch was about to be charged with killing his wife and son. 4 days later, Carol Gable's sources were right.
After more than a year of speculation and questions, investigators appear ready to name Alec Murdoch as the killer of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul.
Alec is set to go on trial in that case in January 2023, and he's pled not guilty. In the spring, Alec Murdoch admitted he stole $4.3 million from Gloria Satterfield's family, who hope to eventually recover some of that money. According to their attorneys, however, the Satterfields have recovered in excess of, get this, $7.5 million from other parties in their case. That wrongful death suit involving Mallory Beach's family, that trial is set for next year as well.
There has been so much legal action in this case that literally the best lawyers from up in Greenville, South Carolina, through Columbia, down to Hilton Head, virtually anybody who is anybody in the legal profession has a piece of this. So it is, in many cases, the battle of the titans.
I don't think it's been covered a lot. They're going to have to draw from a jury pool in a county where there are only 20,000 people, roughly. And I'm willing to bet you'd be hard-pressed to find four people out of the 20,000 that don't know a lot about this case, haven't read a lot, heard about. But beyond that, people that don't have some sort of connection to the Murdoch family.
Oh, I would think it would be extremely difficult, and I think choosing a jury is going to be tedious and take a very long time.
Until these cases play out at trial, Carol and I, we're going to keep reporting, talking to our sources, digging up new information, and finding answers as to what happened in these cases from our beloved home state. Carol Gable, we perhaps have been wasting your talents all of these years at Dateline. You've made a fantastic podcast partner. Again, Carol was retired, so.
Well, this report was impossible to turn down, I have to say.
Well, we actually couldn't have done it without you, so thanks for all your hard work, and thanks to the folks who decided to tune in to this little podcast. This episode is a production of Dateline and NBC News. Haley Barber, Marissa Meyer, Christine Fillmore, and Jarrett Crawford are the producers. Alex Loray is the associate producer. Colin Dow and Bruce Berger are the audio editors. Paul Ryan is the senior producer. From NBC News Audio, Bryson Barnes is the technical director. Bob Mallory is the audio engineer. Nina Bisbano is the associate producer. Additional production help from Ursula Summer.